We'll call the matter of Chavez-Sanchez versus the Attorney General of the United States. And we have Mr. Is it pronounced Menard?
Yes.
Mr. Menard.
Good morning, Your Honor. Chief Judge, may it please the court. My name is William Menard, and I represent the petitioner in this case, Fabiola Chavez-Sanchez. I have respectfully reserved 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you. Ms. Chavez
Could I just start you off? Because this, I mean, this is what I raise this at this point. My colleagues can and will raise their concerns, but here's what struck me about this case from the very start, and from my standpoint, it's what I'm most interested in, and that is the government has contended, and this is a quote, it appears that the board implicitly rejected Chavez-Sanchez's argument for equitable tolling. Now, I'll certainly ask the government why it appears to them that that is the case. But first of all, to you, did the BIA implicitly reject equitable tolling? If so or if not, how do we go about determining what a board does, what the board does implicitly, especially in the wake of numerous cases in our immigration jurisprudence where we have required IJs and the board to more explicitly take on a resolution of issues that have been raised.
Your Honor,
now, I know that sounds like something of a softball, but I have to be candid. This is my concern about this case from start to finish.
I think you took the exactly what I was going to say, right?
He didn't share notes beforehand. No, that's,
yes.
That's for sure. This goes to the heart of our review in any case, really.
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely. One of the primary arguments here is that the BIA completely failed to address whether the petitioner's motion to reopen was subject to equitable tolling or whether the acquittal on all criminal charges constituted a change in circumstances warning reopening. But on the issue of equitable tolling, no, the term equitable, the term tolling, were not mentioned in the decision whatsoever. The BIA simply stated that the motion was untimely. There was absolutely no explanation as to why it was not subject to equitable tolling. So the short answer is they provided no explanation. There is no ruling. Thus, there is no way in which this court could review the propriety of the decision because there was no actual decision on that issue whatsoever.
Now, it may be that, and I certainly don't mean to put words in her mouth, but it may be, maybe I can anticipate that Ms. Singer will take the podium and say to us, well, you know, it's our contention, and I believe they suggested this in their brief, that equitable tolling has never been granted or resorted to in a factual context or a panoply of facts and circumstances similar to this one. And again, that may be the case. Is that enough for purposes of our review?
No, Your Honor. The simple fact here is that this court has ruled that that the time to file a motion to reopen is subject to equitable tolling, and it's set out on numerous occasions, both within and not, you know, outside the immigration context, that equitable tolling exists where there's sufficiently inequitable circumstances such that principles of equity would make the rigid application of a time limitation period unfair. There's simply no ruling on that issue in this decision that was approximately one page long, there's no ruling on that. Your Honors, the petitioner submitted substantial evidence as to why, what caused this very brief delay. The change in circumstances occurred 5 days before the due date. Yeah.
Sure. Let's jump. In all fairness, though, your client has really got some tough sledding ahead, doesn't she, even if you were to prevail on equitable tolling?
Are you referring to whether she's prima facie eligible for relief?
Yes.
Okay. That is another.
There's an enormous amount of discretion, ultimately, that the government has here, right?
Yes, the BIA does have a significant amount of discretion as to what would constitute extremely unusual hardship in this case. So that's really at issue here. The BIA found that even if this case were to move forward on the application for cancellation of removal, that the petitioner is unlikely to succeed on the merits of that argument. But the problem here, Your Honors, is again, the BIA said in its decision that there was, quote, no evidence presented of hardship. That's simply blatantly not true. There were at least over 200 pages of evidence presented in the motion to reopen, which went into why there would be a hardship in this case. The petitioner presented financial documentation to show that the financial hardship. She presented early intervention services, a report showing that there were developmental delays with the child, presented affidavits from families and friends, evidence regarding safety concerns back in Mexico, which is where she would be deported to, and presented evidence that the Montgomery County Office of Children and Youth has emphasized that its goal is to reunify her son with her. And in fact, Your Honors, I would just like to point out, because this came out during the pendency of the appeal, the petitioner has told me that she has, in fact, gained full custody. So the BIA, the charges were acquitted, and she has regained full physical and legal custody. She works part-time while her son is in his first year of school, and while her husband works, and then she takes care of the son the rest of the time. But the developmental delays are continuing, that the son continues to receive special assistance from his school, not to mention all the financial and other factors that were discussed. So the only reason, in fact, that the BIA mentioned that she would not likely succeed on the merits is because she didn't have physical custody of her child, and it wasn't clear she was going to regain it. That's the only evidence that the BIA cites in reaching that decision. So at this point, that's not even true anymore. But even if you go on the evidence that was submitted to the BIA at the time, I just discussed a significant amount of evidence that would show that there was substantial, that at least there's a prima facie case here of substantial hardship. You know, the BIA.
How old is the son now?
Sorry?
How old is the son now?
How old? The son is 4. The BIA held in Matter of Monreal that it set out the factors to be considered for a cancellation of removal case. It considers the ages, health, and circumstances of the qualifying relatives, in this case, the U.S. citizen son, which could include a qualifying, very serious health issues, compelling special needs in school, as well as lower standards of living or adverse country conditions in the country of return. And the BIA explicitly said all hardship factors should be considered in the aggregate when assessing exceptional and extremely unusual hardship. None of that is done here. There is no mention of any of this evidence that was filed to the BIA. It simply said she currently doesn't have full legal custody.
Let me ask a threshold issue. The government, I'm assuming, is going to argue that we don't lack jurisdiction. We functionally have no jurisdiction here because of the very discretionary nature of the sua sponte motion to to reopen. What do you make of our jurisdiction here?
Well, so the jurisdiction comes down to two issues. One would be the fact that if this court or either remanded or ruled on the issue of equitable tolling, the motion would be timely filed, and thus it wouldn't be a sua sponte motion. So our primary argument is that this is timely under the principles of equitable tolling. But even if this court rules that it isn't, this court has the ability to exercise jurisdiction over cases when the BIA has exercised its sua sponte authority to determine whether the correct legal framework has been used to make that decision. And here, there just isn't any. There's no legal framework as to how it reached the decision that, first, that there wasn't a change in circumstances, the fact that her acquittal on criminal charges, which were previously pending, wasn't a change in circumstances. And the other being that what we just discussed, that she's prima facie eligible for relief. The BIA didn't analyze any of the Monreal factors. They didn't discuss, really there's no explanation as to why she's not prima facie eligible for relief. So because this court can review whether they use the proper legal framework in making that decision, this court has jurisdiction to review that matter. And clearly here, that is not, that hasn't happened. And going specifically to the issue in the change in circumstances, so the BIA, the only issue that it seemed to address at all in the opinion is whether there was a sufficient change in, The only thing they discuss is that she was eligible theoretically by statute to apply for the relief at the time of the trial. That was their position. So she should have filed the motion earlier, or she should have filed the application, continued with the application at the time of the trial. But the BIA doesn't address at all why the acquittal on her criminal charges was not a fundamental change in circumstances. The reality is she was charged with endangering the welfare of a child. This was the child that she was supposed, that she would have to prove was...
What would the impact of acquittal be because of the beyond a reasonable doubt standard in a criminal prosecution? Government or the prosecution, I should say, the Commonwealth fell short. But what should that have by way of effect ultimately on her eligibility for cancellation?
Yes, Your Honor. So at the time of the trial, she had a pending charge of endangering the welfare of her child, her own child, which is a child that she would have been charged with proving would suffer a hardship if she were deported. Well, at that point, the only evidence would essentially be her word and a police report, which the government would have certainly asked her about at the time. Once there was an acquittal and there was a judicial decision saying she was not guilty of these offenses, that fundamentally changed the course of the that changed in practical terms what she was eligible to apply.
We all get that. I'm guessing what the question is getting at is perhaps the board would take the view that, well, the fact that it couldn't be proven beyond a reasonable doubt is really irrelevant. We're concerned with whether or not extenuating extreme circumstances have been shown here, and we're not so convinced that there'd be an extreme hardship, even though there wasn't acquittal, if the mother was allowed to remain to raise the child. In fact, looking at the evidence before us, speaking at the BIA, it may well be that the child would be better off if the mother was acquitted. They could certainly take that position, notwithstanding the acquittal. I'm not advocating that position. I'm just suggesting that's the thrust of what we might be concerned about here.
So, Chief Judge, I see my time is up.
You can certainly answer the question, and then I'll ask Judge Restrepo if he has any further questions.
Of course. Yes. So the issue, Your Honor, is not that the BIA or the immigration judge at some point or couldn't have considered all of the evidence, you know, if they'd gone forward with the trial, they obviously would have listened to her testimony as well, on top of the police reports and every, you know, the fact that there were pending criminal charges. But the fact remains that there is no doubt that the fact that she was charged with a serious offense that which related to the person that she was trying to prove a hardship to, impacted the nature of this case. It's not that it would be outcome determinative. The purpose of a motion to reopen is to show that there has been a change in circumstances that would allow or enable the person to reopen the case and try the case under these new circumstances. But the reality is the BIA never addressed any of this. It simply denied the motion and without any explanation.
Major Strepo, well, we'll be having you back on rebuttal, Mr. Bernard. Thank you. Indeed, it seems, based upon your representations here, that there have been even greater changes in circumstances than when the briefs were filed in the case. So we'll hear from Ms. Singer.
Thank you.
My mask, sorry.
May it please the court, my name is Jennifer Singer and I represent the United States Attorney General, the respondent in this matter.
Ms. Singer, I've already telegraphed, I guess, to some extent, my concerns in this case, and at the very least, putting aside the change in circumstances Mr. Menard has brought to our attention, they had to do really with the quality of the BIA adjudication and the lack of what I would consider a sufficient explanation, in fact, a failure to address really at all an important aspect, that is an issue that was raised. And you, I believe, have contended, and I can't remember exactly where this is in your brief, but I think you have suggested either that the BIA wouldn't have granted equitable tolling here if it had considered the merits, or that it was extremely unlikely. And I'm curious as to why that was your position or why that is your position, especially because an equitable tolling request and its ultimate determination is clearly based on a totality of circumstances, or at least it's a very fact-specific determination.
I agree with all that, and the government acknowledges that the board did not expressly discuss or consider the equitable tolling argument. But
you've gone farther than that. You've said that the board implicitly did.
That's correct. Cool. And we have an affirmative defense to the equitable tolling and a more defensive defense to the equitable tolling argument. And the affirmative is, I believe, that it was an implicit rejection of the equitable tolling argument because the board found that the motion was untimely. And I don't think it necessarily had to address something that in this circuit or in the board's jurisprudence, that the circumstances that petitioner identified here have never been found to form a basis for equitable tolling. Equitable tolling has only been found to apply in circumstances of fraud, deceit, ineffective assistance of counsel.
But, you know, in Cruz versus the Attorney General, we said, and I don't recall that this was in the equitable tolling area, but we said an implicit finding is not a substitute for the kind of analysis required for us to provide meaningful review of the BIA decision.
I mean, I think if the board addressed it, they would have just said equitable tolling does not apply here, which
you think they would have.
Well, I think it's an implicit. Just given the nature of where equitable tolling has been found to apply, and this is so far from any of those circumstances, I think implicit in the board's untimeliness finding is that equitable tolling does not apply here. But even aside from that, if this court were not to agree and find that the court did not and should have addressed the equitable tolling argument, at the end of the day, that does not really matter because remand for more of an elaborate discussion on equitable tolling is, but the error is harmless here because at the end of the day, even if equitable tolling were to apply and the motion to reopen were effectively deemed timely, the petitioner would still have to show prima facie eligibility for relief, and that is not what happened in this case here. And that would bring me to my second point. And the prima facie finding is dispositive of the case. So any error that the board may have made with respect to not expressly considering the equitable tolling argument is rendered harmless because of the prima facie finding.
Before we go forward on that, you would agree, would you not, that we have an institutional interest in assuring that we receive an adjudication from the BIA, from any tribunal, really, whose decision we review, assuring us that it is specific enough, detailed enough, explicit enough to perform the review that we necessarily must perform.
I agree with that, but in the circumstances given here, the factors that the petitioner presented are so, they've never been found to be sufficient to have to be a basis for equitable tolling. The circumstances
never been
are
found
so,
not to be sufficient. Maybe the case has never come up before.
And from my surveying of the Third Circuit case law applying equitable tolling, I have never seen these circumstances come up or equitable tolling applied to them.
Exactly. And in fairness to your position, your adversary has not pointed us to any cases either. So I neglected to ask him that. But we are in a kind of uncharted territory here. But doesn't it seem reasonable to you that the petitioner would have taken the action she did earlier or that her counsel would, given the pendency of this prosecution?
The action of what? Filing a... What action are you referring to?
The action of withdrawing the motion earlier.
I mean, I don't know what underlied that decision. This court and the board have found that it was tactical and strategic. There might have been other, I don't know what the petitioner and her attorney at that point discussed. There could have been other things going on, but
prosecution hanging over her head for child abuse.
It's correct, but I mean, another alternative was counsel asking for a continuance of the court case to see what happens to the pending charge. I mean, there was other avenues for the counsel before the immigration judge to take, so I'm not going to surmise why this counsel elected to withdraw with the blessing of petitioner, because on the record, counsel admitted that they discussed whether it was discussed with petitioner and petitioner agreed to it. So I don't want to surmise.
Isn't that paring things a little thin, the difference between withdrawing, the difference between continuing? You don't think so?
No, I think counsel, an alternative to withdrawal was counsel before the immigration judge could have asked for a continuance to see the outcome or the resolution of the conviction or of the criminal case that was pending. That was an avenue that could have been taken and that was not taken.
What if the continuance had been denied?
Then the petitioner could have appealed that. And I mean, this is all conjecture because that's not what happened. And the appeal
could have appealed the denial of a continuance.
Yes. And that appeal could have been before the board, and now here we are, three decisions later on a motion to reopen. I mean, that could have all been litigated before. And in conjunction with the appeal to the board after the proceedings, there was also a simultaneous motion to remand. All these things also could have been raised in the motion to remand in the previous go-around, not. And none of those issues were raised here. Again, regardless of the equitable tolling issue, whether this panel thinks that the board should have been more fulsome in its discussion of the issue, at the end of the day, that error is harmless because this prima facie finding by the board is dispositive of the entire case. Because even if timely, even if the equitable tolling principles applied, the petitioner still would have to show prima facie case for eligibility for cancellation of removal, and that was not done here.
And why wouldn't she be able to at least make a very strong argument now that assuming she has custody, that she now has custody of a four-year-old U.S. citizen? Why wouldn't that be? I would hope that the board would want to know that and would weigh that pretty heavily.
I mean, that's up to petitioner to file probably another motion, but we look at the evidence that was before the board at the time and before the board.
That's not my question. The question is, why wouldn't the board? You sounded like, well, we'll go back to the board and he's going to lose he'll make his argument, he's going to lose. And knowing what I've read about the board decisions, you may well be right. But let's assume we're in the best of possible worlds, where the board would really care that you got a four-year-old kid here who's going to now be either deprived of his mother's upbringing or be shipped off to Mexico along with his mom, not speaking any English.
I'm not sure I'm following what the question is.
Spanish. No, you're making it sound like, well, no big deal. They could have raised it before the board. And I'm saying I would think that the board would want to know it. And if that's the case, it would be a material change in the circumstances. The fact that she now has custody of the son.
Right, but during the process of the motion to reopen, the evidence before the board, the petitioner did not have custody of her son. This is all new information.
Well, we know that. But, I mean, doesn't this seem to you to be a big deal that custodial arrangements have changed profoundly?
I mean, that is all new information to me, but it's not
That's the point.
But it's now petitioner's burden to go before the board and say, look, this is what happened. This is all new information, and we're defending a decision that happened when the facts and circumstances were different.
What you just said, could you say that again? It's petitioner's burden.
To now go before the board and say, hey, this is what happened. I now have custody of this child.
I think that's what she's trying to do.
I mean, I have no power to do anything about this at this juncture. Petitioner has the burden to go before the board and ask for some kind of relief.
I take you for your word at that, but that's a pretty sad commentary on this process, that we are here with such a huge change in the custodial situation of this child, and we're hearing that it might change the game, but in the course of saying that earlier he should have asked for a continuance rather than withdrawing a motion. Now the petitioner can file a new petition, and it's up to him to do that. Meanwhile, the custodial change has taken place, and this matter stands in limbo. I mean, maybe I am just missing something that is terribly, terribly obvious here, but that just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
I'm missing it too.
It's the process. This is information the petitioner holds himself.
The board doesn't know it, and
government doesn't know it. But so now it's his opportunity to go before the board and say these things have changed.
That's what he's asking to do, but he can't do it now because it's been dismissed. He can't get back before the board unless the board agrees to be open. Am I missing something? How can he go back before the board unless the board agrees to reopen the matter? You're saying, oh, go back before the board. It's not that simple.
Right, but I don't want to surmise what the board will do with all this new information, but clearly the circumstances are very different than what was presented to the board in the decision that we're defending now.
Exactly the point. That is exactly the point. You're making his argument.
Right, but that doesn't mean at the time the board's decision that is what I'm defending now was not incorrect.
Well, what would happen if, let's assume, and there's no reason to think otherwise, that the child and the mother have been reunited, what would happen if the government withdrew its opposition to having the petitioner go before the board?
I mean, that's something that I could reach out to, ICE counsel and see if that's a possibility.
Is that a possibility?
It's a possibility, yes. But again,
is it a possibility the government would be willing to entertain?
It's something the government would be willing to entertain.
One
but this
thing
is
the
all
government,
new information to me. I have no idea this council could have.
We understand that. We understand that, Ms. Singer, and this is certainly not personal to you. Please understand. And I will have a question of Mr. Menard when he gets back up on rebuttal. But it would seem to me that even before the change in circumstances we have been alerted to today, the government could have taken the position, well, you know, this issue of equitable tolling is not governed by a decision of this circuit going one way or another. We could just skip by that and let the matter go forward and be determined on the merits anyway. And that's how I was looking at this case, even if it would not have required me to rule that way, just looking at it practically. But things have now changed drastically in terms of the mother-child relationship. So if, in my view, it could have been and maybe should have been done before, it sure ought to be done now.
I mean, that is something that we would entertain. I mean, this would have to have discussions going forward, but...
And could we leave here today with our panel determined to render a decision in due course, but under the understanding that you would go back to your superiors and discuss with them this change of circumstances, which I know is new to you, it's new to us, and see if this matter could at least go forward?
I mean, that's something that the government is willing to entertain. I'm happy to have conversations with counsel and DHS and see what can be done about this case, but I mean, the decision at hand...
Stop there. There's no need to, after that, they don't have anything after the but, throw it out. That's all you need to say. Because the case is in limbo, and you want to continue to make legal arguments. It's not necessary. I'm reminded of a property professor I had in law school who was giving the example of to a bunch of first-day law students. What do you do if someone's trespassing on your property and all this? And everybody said, oh, you bring an action on trespass. You bring an action on nuisance. He says, no, you put up a fence. And maybe it's that simple. Rather than getting into all the legal intricacies, you just decide with whomever you have to talk to about whether or not this thing can't be resolved.
I mean,
at least procedurally resolved by agreeing to let it go back to the board.
Point taken, but just to say whether this panel thinks that the mechanisms that are in place are unfair. I mean, those are the mechanisms in place. They are what they are. So, but given that, I'm happy to go back.
I don't know what my colleagues think. Even if I thought that. You have a golden opportunity. You have a golden ticket here, not to the chocolate factory, but you have a golden ticket to perhaps remedy something that at least I think on the face of it is not as fair as it could be. You have an opportunity to go back to your folks. I know it's not your final call, but to at least have a discussion. Say, look, this mom now has custody of the four-year-old. I would assume that OIC would have done a pretty thorough investigation about her suitability to have custody of the child. Before they let her have custody of the child. There's obviously another person involved here. And that's maybe something the BIA would want to know and would consider and think, well, okay, we'll grant her cancellation. Maybe not, but maybe so.
No, as I've indicated, I'm happy to go back and have conversations with counsel and DHS and see what can be done going forward.
No good. That's it. No but. Period. No but. That's great. And we appreciate
that. With that, I will rest.
Let's leave it at that from a government standpoint for now. And I would like to hear from Mr. Menard, but I would like to begin by asking him, careful, COVID's bad enough. We don't want a personal injury issue on our hands here.
The mask blocked my view.
Did you communicate this information to Ms. Singer or anybody with the agency?
Your Honor, this is something...
It is susceptible of a yes or no reply.
It really is. It begs of a yes or no.
Whether she regained full custody, I did not. I just learned about that. I didn't tell Ms. Singer that she has regained full custody. The evidence regarding whether...
Say the same thing to you, Mr. Menard,
yes.
That formed a question I asked Ms. Singer. Don't you think that is a profoundly big deal?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
It's about human beings.
Yes, absolutely. And
the client and her child.
Yes, Your Honor, that is true. We did, in our motion, this has been a rapidly developing case in a situation in which we filed a motion to reopen. Subsequent to the motion to reopen, the BIA took a significant amount of time to make a decision. During that time, she was first in detention, was released from detention, has been working with the Office of Children and Youth. We submitted evidence to the BIA that she has been that the Office of Children and Youth has the goal of reunifying with her and was working with her even before the criminal charges were over, but certainly afterwards.
We knew that. This panel knew that.
Yeah, that's in your brief. Yeah.
Right. So since that was the last time at which we could have submitted new evidence in the case to the BIA was when we submitted the motion to reopen. The BIA doesn't doesn't accept new evidence until the filing.
Back to the fence analogy. You're talking about submitting new evidence and motions and all this really good technical legal stuff that you get paid for. You pick up the damn phone. Say, Ms. Singer, my client just was reunited with her son, has full custody now. Is that something you'd be willing to take to your folks to see whether or not they would allow for or agree to a remand? Mr. Singer strikes me as an eminently reasonable, very skilled attorney, very reasonable attorney. She wants to do the right thing here. She represents a client, but she obviously wants to do the right thing. Maybe a mom herself, I don't know. But just pick up the phone and call.
Yes,
sir. Make it simple.
Yeah. Well, Judge McKee, do you have any other questions?
Just exasperation, no questions.
Well, I'm accustomed to that, but it's often expressed in my direction. Judge Restrepo, do you do you have anything further?
If I may, Your Honor, just one final thing.
Very quickly.
Okay.
Please.
Yes, the counsel mentioned that there were no circumstances in which the BIA or this court had granted equitable tolling in any circumstances other than that mentioned by the government. The BIA, in fact, in an unpublished decision, but in 2017, reopened a case for equitable tolling following a change in law that affected the non-citizens' eligibility for relief. So the BIA has, before, reopened a case simply because of a change in law, which was not one of the kind of, reasons that Ms. Singer mentioned earlier as the only reasons they could grant equitable tolling.
All right. Here's what I would like to do, and I've just briefly discussed it with Judge Restrepo, and I'll ask Judge McKee if this is satisfactory to him, because I think it's important to keep this matter on track. I would suggest that we should, notwithstanding the information we've just received, take the matter under advisement while at the same time giving the parties the opportunity, indeed the admonition, that they consult with a view toward providing this panel with an answer within the next 20 days. Where would that put us date-wise? 20, this is what, the 22nd?
It's the 22nd.
October 12th, thereabouts?
I guess, yes, October 12th. That we have an answer from you as to whether there is any resolution prepared of this matter. I would also indicate that there, depending upon that, what that resolution may be, this court may decide to enter a judgment in the matter together with a supporting an opinion, or we may ask to hear further from the parties. That will depend upon the information you provide us. But I think I speak for all three members of the panel when I say that this is certainly a considerable change in circumstances we've been alerted to today. I think it's regrettable that change, that factual change, was not communicated previously to Ms. Singer. This is not a matter even that had to be telephoned. It could have even been mentioned prior to the argument today. We don't live in silos, even in these days of COVID, but we are where we are right this minute, and that's what our expectation will be of the parties and of counsel here, that we hear from 20 days, that is by October 12, from you, as to whether or not you have agreed upon some course forward, either a resolution of this case or a procedural course to take going forward in this case. And if not, we will undertake to complete our duties in terms of the resolution of the matter. Judge McKee, do you have anything further?
Nope, I don't. Thank you.
Judge Restrepo, to the extent that you may be seated, Mr. Bernard, don't trip this time.
trip next time.
In any event, I trust that both of counsel realize that the vigor with which the panel has pursued this matter is only a reflection of the seriousness with which we regard this case in all cases, but also the seriousness with which we regard the change that has occurred here and its impact on the parties and for that matter, on a mother and child. So without saying anything further, we'll anticipate that you go forward and have good faith discussions, and I'll say no further. So with that, I'll ask the clerk to please conclude the proceedings.
Look, you want to call me on my cell?
Yes, can we call you in about 10 minutes, Judge McKee?
Yep. Perfect.
Thank you. Yes.